Welcome to Building 72, the podcast brought to you by the Entertainment Arts and Engineering Program at the University of Utah. Thank you for joining your hosts, Adam Hunter and Corinne Lewis, to talk about the video game industry and, you know, probably other stuff.
Welcome back to Building 72, everybody. I hope you're all having a wonderful day. We're certainly having a good day around these parts. My name is Adam Hunter, as you know, and with me always is Corinne Lewis.
Hi, everybody.
And today's guest is a man who works in the mystical field known as technical arts. So we're gonna talk all about that and what that means. So this is Utsav. Utsav, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us how you got to where you are and how what road you took to get there?
Yeah, for sure. And thank you for having me. And yeah, my name is Utsav. My official job title is Technical Art Consultant at Unity Technologies. And I'm part of a team that's called Professional Services. I think they just changed the names to Unity Accelerate Solutions. I can talk more about that. But yeah, I was in cohort six. I went to technical art emphasis. I went to EAE with a technical arts emphasis, but my bachelor's was in computer science. So I was more of a coder. In fact, I even submitted a code sample with my application. I was pretty proud of that code sample. but yeah, so I think I didn't know a lot about technical art when I came to EAE. I all I knew was, hey, I can code and you need to code to make games. That's pretty much what, that was my complete information of games. I did not know Maya existed. I did not even know Unity existed. Like if you would have told me, hey, do you know Unity? I would have been like, I don't know what you're talking about. so everything that I've learned about game development has been after I joined EAE. Before that, my knowledge was strictly computer science. After I left EAE, I joined a mobile studio called Pay Studios. We make slot games. So I was there for a year. Then I left that for Fox Next Games. I was at Fox Next Games. They make Marvel Strike Force. They also were making a different product at the time, Storyscape. That's what I worked on for a few months. Then I came back to Play Studios as a senior technical artist. And then recently in January, I actually started at Unity as a technical art consultant. So that's the summary of my last 4 or 5 years.
That's awesome. We need to talk offline. We need to talk about Fox Next because I know a couple of people who work there. So we need to play the
game. Sure.
So you said you didn't know anything about game development before you came to the EAE program. Mm-hmm. With your bachelor's in computer science, what were you still planning on hopefully going into games, even though you didn't know anything about game development, or were you maybe more pointed in a different engineering direction?
Right. So in college, the only thing related to games I did was there was a cricket game. So I was back in India. So there was a cricket game and it took normal inputs from your keyboards. And in MATLAB, we did image processing to change the input from keypad to a laptop camera or a webcam. And that's when I knew, hey, I want to do something in gaming because it was cool. It was like I found computer science boring up until then. And you know, that was the 2-day boot camp was like, this is what I want to do. So I didn't know what technical art was. So essentially I started looking at computer science programs that were game design oriented. And I looked at Rochester, I looked at DigiPen, and I stumbled upon EAE with technical art. And the reason I even found that was like, I was looking at, hey, I have Photoshop skills and I know computer science, what can I do in games, like apart from coding? It was like, hey, technical art may be a thing for you. And I saw EAE had one, I read through the program, I read through what technical art was, and I was like, hey, this sounds like I can use code to do artistic work. I'm gonna give it a shot. That was pretty much it. And then beyond that, I just started applying to schools. So I did apply to some CS programs just in case this doesn't pan out, I knew I wanted to study more. So I was like, hey, maybe I'll just do AI, like AI or ML or something like that. But game dev was like my highest priority because all other computer science work seemed boring to me. Also, I was a little naive. I didn't know a lot back then what computer science world entailed.
Well, we fooled you.
No, I'm very glad that I made the decision that I did. Like I'm where I am because, you know, of the decisions I made, and I'm pretty happy with those.
Well, game development is so team oriented. I mean, not that coding isn't, but coding is kind of like you check in your code and, you know, you sort of have to deal with some other people sometimes, but not all of it. But you know, like our whole shtick is that
sorry about my cat.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. Oh, it's cute.
And never apologize for cats.
Yes.
Never,
ever. Yes. If you're just listening to this, it's super cute cat, white cat. But you know, the whole team aspect is sometimes pretty daunting for people when they get into it, because they, you know, when you think about yourself as a single contributor to something is a very different thing than a team member. And that sometimes is rough.
Yeah, no, definitely. And also I think how oriented, you know, team oriented game development is, like everything is so dependent on everybody else. Like the reason it's hard to make an indie game is not because, hey, it's just hard to make a game. It's because you need to know like 100 different things to actually do that. So I definitely think that's one of the harder parts of making a game versus computer science.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's certainly how EAE got started, right? Because when Bob first started talking to our industry friends, they were like, well, we need help, you know, teaching artists to talk to engineers, because that's, and engineers talk to artists because they don't speak the same language, because they've never had to do that together. And now here in our studio, they really have to. And, you know, that was the thing that was so interesting to me when we first started seeing technical artists, because it's like your brain actually works both ways. And, you know, you really can talk to the artists and you really can talk to the engineers. And for you, you can do both things really well, very proficiently. So it's such a rare skill. And we, you know, Mark had said for years, this is something that we need to help people get better at. So
yeah, no, for sure. And also I think like, I think technical art is just such a widely used term, you know, like, but I think the one major thing, or at least the one core thing about technical art to me, is understanding art in terms of data. As in like, you know, what is art? Art is just a visual representation of data that somebody's hand painted, right? Mm-hmm. So technically, if you wanted to change that visual representation, you could change the data. And if you can understand how the change of data can affect the visual element of that file, that's essentially technical art. At least in my head, that's what technical art means. And then it just sounds awesome to me, I guess.
I really like that. I don't think I've ever heard anybody describe it that way before. And I really, really like that.
I'm glad. No, I was telling this to the other. So the other day I was talking to one of my coworkers, and he's from a more gameplay system design kind of person. And we were having a similar conversation where he was like, hey, like, I don't do a lot of graphics. I'm trying to learn. And I explained to him the exact same way what graphics was. And he was like, I wish somebody would have told me, you know, to look at it that way. And then I would have done more graphics work. And I'm like, you know, it doesn't matter how you look at it. I think, you know, if you have interest, you just find your way to what you enjoy if you go that route.
So on that note of like doing what you enjoy, you had said, you know, you had your BS in CS, or I guess that's how that works. And then you said you knew Photoshop. Did you have a lot of art background, like from when you were growing up or any of your other schooling?
No, not at all. Like I still cannot make production ready art. That's not, I start an interview by letting people know that if you expect me to do production level art, that's not what I'm going to do. My art experience before was doing posters for college events in Photoshop that I just picked up because I was like, somebody has to do it, I'll do them. And it looked cool. I was like, hey, I could design some cool posters, right? Use some cool brushes, you know, hand draw some cool, you know, things, nothing to, you know, detail, nothing that needs to go in front of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people. So I was like, I can do that. That was it. That was basically it.
Okay. And then did you have any experience with CS before your bachelor's degree? Like, had you been coding for a while?
High school. So in India, you can take computer science in high school if you want. I decided to take it. It didn't seem that hard. It's generally like I like coding. I like math. I work. My brain's very logical in a way. Like I think about things logically more than I do emotionally, I guess. So it just made sense for me to like go into computer science and you know do those kinds of things. I actually wanted to be a neuroscientist and then work at NASA. So you know.
I mean, you're doing pretty cool stuff now, but that's also really cool. I have some students who will occasionally come up to me and they'll be a little bit worried because they'll say, you know, I'm already in college now and I've never really tried coding before. And so I'm too late, right? Like yeah. if I haven't been coding since high school, or if I haven't been coding since elementary school, it's too late for me to pick that up. Do you feel that that's the case?
Definitely not. I mean, so I didn't have a clue what Unity was, right? And I work at Unity right now. So like, and Unity is a completely different language. I'd never done C#. I'd done some Java. I hated Java. I still hate Java, even though I like C#, right?
Doesn't everybody hate Java?
I hope so.
I have a friend that's like, he is an expert Java programmer and adores it.
Oh yeah, somebody always does.
I mean somebody has to, right?
Yeah, he's the one.
He wouldn't use it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
To be fair, he works at Blue Origin, so.
I mean, I think you've got to love Java to do that.
So let's actually talk about Unity for a second. So you mentioned, you know, you're on the kind of like services side, or I forgot the term that you used for it. What is your job at Unity? What do you do on like a day-to-day basis? What kind of responsibilities do you have?
Right. So what I do, I am essentially a consultant that works for Unity and helps our customers. So essentially, if there's a team using Unity and they have, depending on the kind of engagement they've worked out with Unity, they could have a custom contract where it's a long-term engagement where we would be expert advisors to their teams, maybe even help develop tools or features for their team. And that'll go on for a few months. The second kind of engagements the second kind of work that we do is project reviews, which could come in multiple different ways. It's technical architecture review, technical art review. It could be code and assets review. And that is more, we spend about 2 days going through minute details of the project, like what Unity packages are you using? How have your systems been developed? Are your systems data-driven or you know, behavior-driven? Like all of like very nitty-gritty, very technical stuff. And then if we can, we help them during the time we're there. But otherwise, what we do is we go back, go through source code or ask questions if they have any problems, or if we have other solutions, we'll find those. And then either give them some code or at least a full report telling what we found, how they can fix it, and how to improve performance or the entire design of their game. So it's a very holistic, you have to take a very holistic approach to game development.
Wow, that sounds so cool.
Yeah, that is fascinating.
You're probably seeing some of the most amazing products and projects. And oh my gosh, Utsav, this is so good for you because you're so analytical. But you also can talk. So that's nice. That's not always the skill sets that's together, right?
That's interesting. I never thought about it that way. But yeah, that's probably right. And I think a lot of my team, I think that you would see a lot of that in my team. So
that's awesome.
So I think you're absolutely right. You've hit the nail on the mark. But it's pretty interesting because, you know, I recently, over the last month or so, I've been on like 4 different games that I've had to review.
Yeah.
From mobile to like console titles, right? And they all have similar problems on different scales.
Oh my gosh.
And that's about it, right? And it's pretty interesting to be able to see that. And I think I've learned so much in the last 2 months, and it's actually been so cool to just work here for a couple of months.
I bet that sounds so amazing. Like you, oh my gosh, that just sounds like the perfect job for you.
You know, funnily enough, did you remember Vega?
Yeah.
She said the exact same to me. She's like, that sounds like the job for you. And I'm like, I don't know why everybody says that, but I guess I'll take it as a compliment.
You should take it as a compliment because I think that, I mean, that certainly... You have an ability to see things very clearly that are wrong.
That's, yeah, I will take that as a compliment.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is that a compliment, Karina?
It is.
Dive deeper into that.
You know, when you're working with a bunch of people that are your peers, it can be hard, you know?
Yeah.
But as a job, I mean, and it's so valuable to a company because you can really see where to fix things, right? Like you're really good at seeing where to fix things.
And I think that's pretty interesting because like our team is generally the team that files most bugs on Unity's source engine. And we're the ones who are talking to Unity's R&D teams and we're telling them, hey, this is how, you know, our customers expect to use Unity. And then this is what they don't find in Unity. Or on a daily basis, we'll be going through like rendering pipeline and find something. And I also think it's pretty interesting because I feel like this job will teach me how to be polite when telling people that they're doing things wrong.
Well, that's a good skill for all of us.
So do you feel, because you had mentioned earlier about, you know, regular CS stuff is boring and you like game development because it's cool. Do you feel, having been in, I want to make sure I'm phrasing this correctly, having been at other game companies and having been in the program where you were doing kind of direct game development, does this fill that game development need inside you to have your hands like helping out so many other teams?
It depends from project to project, but for the most part, yes, because if I'm doing a project that is in pre-production, then I'm talking more about TDD, you know, their technical design document and their technical art pipeline and how they want to set that up the best way they can. But for like 70 to 80% from, at least from what I've understood in the past 2 months, is going to be more where the game's already in production, may possibly close to release, but generally midway through production. And they're like, hey, now we need to know what to optimize and how to go about and how to find things. Because we don't just tell them what's wrong. We like, sometimes we would go through like profiling their entire game in front of them, where we would go through like function markers and we'd be like, hey, this is how long this frame is taking. And this is how long this draw call is taking. And this is why it's taking so long. And these are like five different things you could do in the rendering pipeline to fix it. So we would do that in front of them. So what that really brings me is that I feel like I'm contributing to the solution, because the cool part about game development to me is that every day you're solving a problem, mm-hmm. at least in my role, right? My role is not busy bee kind of role. My role is generally like, hey, your VFX artist needs a shader that works with X thing, or hey, that artist can't export his FBX file, or hey, our game's frame rate is garbage. Can we please fix this, right? So I think every day is a new problem. And for me, that's why technical art and game dev is so cool. And I think this job for the most part does that. And I can't expect it to be 100%, to be honest, at least knowing my previous jobs.
I love that. And you know, I think you make a good point about solving problems. I mean, that's why we like games, right? Like we like games give us problems. And the fact that making games also gives us problems, it's such a good way of thinking about things. I always, you know, you can make games and not love games, but it helps. It really helps. It
definitely helps. I think being able to think about games in a way that makes you feel good about them, and then just, you know, you can enjoy that. And then I think one thing that has always been in my head is like, hey, am I doing something that's actually benefiting someone, right? And like, right. I was working on like casino games before and I didn't feel great about it, but hey, it was a decent job, right? You have to start somewhere. But I think it's not just that, I guess. There's a lot more to work than that, right? And for me, game dev is like a constant puzzle that you're trying to solve. And what's more fun than that, right? Like, especially when that's your work, that when that's what you get paid to do. I mean, and of course, things get intense sometimes, right? Like some of our clients were in Japan and other places. So I had to do 6 a.m. meetings. But it's not like I'm working 10 hours. I'll work 6 to 3, but it's still like awkward times depending on clients and Zoom and stuff. But if you like your job, you kind of don't mind it that much, I guess, is the point.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
I actually kind of want to talk about, you mentioned Zoom just barely. What has it been like? What has it been like starting a new company and starting a new, not only a new company, but kind of a different career path, or at least a slightly different career path? What is it like starting that in the middle of like a working from home pandemic? How has been like the onboarding and the, you know, getting to know to the team and stuff like that?
Right. I mean, yeah, that's been really different. It's interesting. I'm glad it was at Unity, because I think Unity did a pretty good job of giving me enough time. And another thing at Unity that they ask us to do is like, hey, book one-on-ones with all of your team members if you can over the next few weeks that you're here. So I've been doing that and then meeting my team members that way. It really sucks for me though, because I have heard that our office up here is really cool and I want to go check it out. It's on the 9th floor and you can see like Mount Rainier from it, and I can get freshly brewed coffee or beer if I want. So I'm like, I really want to go to my office. You know, I've been to San Francisco office when I wasn't even a Unity employee, and now that I am. So that part sucks. And obviously I think getting to know the team in person is just a different experience, I think. because I guess you don't know, you know, how a person would react or if or what their body language is or things like that, even if they have their cameras on, right? Mm-hmm. If I know you, then it's different than if I don't know you, because I know what to expect. So I think that's definitely different and challenging in a way, but I do think Unity made it a little bit easier.
Are they talking to you about when you're going to go back into the office at all?
So they haven't like told us dates, but they're like, as you know, things are coming back, they are thinking of like somewhere in after summer or late summer, fall, that they come. I'm hoping that I get to work from home a couple of days a week, yeah, just because I'm about 30-40 minute commute away, and I don't want to do that five days a week, but
I think our lives are going to be very different. I think everybody knows that they can work from home just fine. So, you know,
especially like in our kind of field, right? Like it's mostly digital work. Like you don't need to be in place.
Well, and the other thing of, you know, it's like go to the office in the days that you need to do in-person meetings. And then you just at home, you just have a lot more focus time, you know? So unless like me, who is nuts, so over being home.
Yeah. Unless you're like Corinne, who breaks down the door of the building so that she can be there in person, even if she's the only
person. By myself.
No, I completely understand that. Because like, I don't know if I'd call myself an extrovert. I know a lot of people think I'm an extrovert, but I feel like I'm more comfortable with people I know. That's why they think I'm an extrovert, because I'm already friends with them. But it's hard for me to like be extroverted with new people, I guess. So I'm not completely an introvert, but still I'm over being home. Like at this point, I'll take 5 days of going to work than working, you know, remotely for 2 to 3 days, just because I want to go back to work. And it has nothing to do with like, I can work from home. I miss it. I miss meeting people. I miss grabbing a beer after work. I miss, you know, making friends with my teammates. And I do think that that you know, helps your work as well. Cause you're, you know, you ask the stupid questions if you think that that other person is not judging you. And especially for my job, that's a very important skill to have. Like, I have to ask stupid questions to my R&D teams and other people that know more things than me, right? I wish I could go back.
Really glad that you said that, because I always try and cement that idea with students. Is like, you're going to be working around these people for 40 plus hours a week. That's more time than you see like some of your family and your friends. And so having that like camaraderie and the little things that you said, like being able to judge someone's body language or being able to just go over to their desk and be like, hey, do you have 5 minutes to talk about this? Yeah. That kind of stuff is,
I miss that. Like I have to check and see, do you have time to Zoom? And are you going to turn your camera on? And you're not going to turn your camera on. And I'm like, okay, maybe I won't turn my camera on then.
Just too much etiquette to follow.
Yes. Although I have, you know, what's been really fun is seeing people's houses. I mean, even if it's just one wall, right? Because it's like people are more who they are, right? When we're in our offices, maybe people bring, you know, stuff in, but maybe not. And so,
yeah. I mean, you've probably seen my cat jump around. We just put that up last weekend, the weekend before. So well, that was a lot of work, but yeah, no, I do. It's interesting, because I think you get to see a little piece of them, you know, like, because I think at work, people can put up a facade if they want. Mm-hmm. But like, I guess when you can peek into just a little part of their home, especially the part where they spend most of their time.
Well, and most people are, you know, lots of people don't have the luxury of an office. I mean, I'm super lucky. So, you know, Adam actually had to build his. So lots of people are just at their kitchen table and you can see their kids and their family and all of, you know, all the things. And it's like, you know, I think it's just making us a lot more human again with each other. So.
Yeah, and I also think, I think once this is over, you know, we'll come back with a lot of floors.
I have been saving up money to travel.
Hopefully we get to do it.
Yes. So
do you think that, you talk about like coming back and coming back in force, do you think that, because technical art kind of as a concept and as a field is relatively new, right? Like people were always kind of doing various things, but they didn't quite know what to call it. Do you think technical art as a whole, like, is there going to be a lot more crossover between engineering and art in the future, or is it going to stay reserved for kind of the subset of people who can do both?
No, I think moving forward, a lot of content is going to be code powered, I guess is the way to put it. Like I already, like I think Unity Art Engine and then Unreal has its own ML thing to like up-res your textures and like create patterns and textures. And I think that's only going to get better. And I think our graphics techniques are so sophisticated at the moment that we could generate, you know, all of our art data on the fly and render it without an artist ever being part of the pipeline. I mean, it's not to a point where we can do it in the way it looks right now. And obviously there's still people who need to do lighting and actually design and do the concepting, right? But I think actually making production ready art, I don't think that's a thing that's going to be the same. When it comes to technical art, I think it's an interesting line in between, because I think technical art is mostly divided into two subsections. One is graphics programming, straight up graphics programming. The people call themselves technical artists, but they can write better shaders than 90% of programmers can for sure. Like I know people like that, right? And I think the second subset is art pipeline and tools. And obviously there's a third set of like technical animators and riggers, but I would call them more in the sense of like content, they're more content focused. And a lot of people have, I think a lot of studios have gone towards the technical animator job title for those kinds of roles and rigor instead of technical artist. So I think when it comes to technical art, which I think was your original question, I think it's gonna keep increasing in future. And I think you're gonna have more intertwinement between code, but I also think you're gonna need to know more about art because you're gonna need to do a lot of artwork through code. And in order to do that, you need to understand composition. You need to, you know, understand just what is your limits in terms of word data? What is your limit in terms of texture data? How much can you push through? Like, there's a lot of things to think about. I think a lot of times people like simplify content creation a lot. It's like, oh, it's just an artist like creating an asset and then another artist texturing and then animating it. But it's a lot complicated. And I don't think that pipeline's going anywhere if that's the question.
For sure. We had a talk from Side Effects earlier this week from the people who make Houdini, and they were talking about this cool like procedural scattering thing where you could basically like, hey, we want to make a forest, but we only want these flowers to appear at the bases of these trees. And he kind of went off on this just really, really cool thing. But then he doubled back and he said, now keep in mind, you still have to have those fundamentals like composition and stuff like this will help you generate it as a starting point. But it's not that you just push the button and now your entire level is completed, because you still need that human eye
exactly
going in there and figuring
exactly
it out.
And I think the best way to put it is an artist is not just an artist, it's also a designer. Like an artist is designing that asset piece. He or she is not just, you know, making something because it looks cool. It's like there's a lot of thought that goes into it. Maybe you don't understand art in a technical way, but you understand art in a design way, which is just equally as important. So it's just a different pipeline in terms of, you know, production artists aren't going to be the you know, default production artists people think of, but I think they're going to be more about visual design and how to, you know, put that forward and make it even better. Because I think games are going to keep looking better and better as we keep moving forward.
Well, I think actually you proved that point, like you prove it, because you were doing poster design, right? And learning the tools for that. And that's like, that has to be able to read correctly to get your message out there. You know, you're having to practice placement and color theory and all of those kinds of things. And you're not thinking that as art, but that graphic design part, yeah, all those skills have informed how good a technical artist you are. You know?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think those things, yeah. So it's just, I guess I just say it in different ways, but it, yeah, like visual design, that element of art production, I think is getting more intense in game development rather than getting less intense.
Yeah, and I mean, we over the years, we've definitely seen people who have come into the technical art track and realize they don't have that. And so they go back over to the programming side, which is fine. I mean, we need excellent tools programmers, right? And, you know, and you can be really good at something and realize that you're, you know, what am I trying to say? When you when you are not good at something, but you know you can help somebody who is good at it is still just as valuable, right?
No, like, absolutely. I think that's what a technical art is, right? I cannot make production ready art. My hands just don't work that way.
Right.
If I wanted to, I couldn't, right? What I do is help my team members, because a lot of the times technical artists is never generating content, right? You're never actually making directly anything that's going into the game. All you're doing is making sure your team has all the tools they need and resources they need to make the game. And I think that's very important, because if you end up making a tool that saves an hour from 40 artists over like a year, that's exactly more manpower saved than spent on you.
Yeah. I remember, I don't know if you took any classes from Ian Gilmore.
Do you remember? Yeah, I did. I did one.
Bye yeah. Then. So, I mean, and he's at a studio in England now, and I can't remember where he's at, but I remember him saying that. It's like, look, we don't have to, just like programmers, we don't have to be on the front.
Yeah.
But we make it go.
Yeah, know? No, absolutely. And you know what, talking about systems programmers, it's a technical artist's best friend would be a systems programmer who understands how to design systems without mm-hmm. dependencies. Mm-hmm. And like, because as a technical artist, what do I want to do? I want to inject my code and tools into different systems. And I want them to work with as minor a work or as minor like a breakdown in the process for other people that I possibly can. And for that, I need a well-designed system that I can scale, you know, when I need to, by adding tools. And for that, I need to have somebody who knows how to design and write a system. And writing a system for games is way different than writing a system for an app, right?
Right.
Like for an app, you're writing small functions. You're like doing a lot of API calls. Or for game, you want to make a one bigger system because there's a lot going on. And it's like, I could go into technical stuff all day, right? I don't want to, because it's just, I know people get bored of that. But I just mean like, I love systems designers, or at least good ones.
Right. Well, it's such an interesting job that you're doing, because you're client facing. That is pretty, I mean, like I said, you know, like you can talk, which is awesome, because not everybody can. But the fact that you can explain what you're doing, you know, to laymen, I mean, although game developers aren't technically like that, but they are, you know, have problems to solve. And I just think it's such a great job. I mean,
no, that's actually completely right. Not because game developers don't know what they're talking about, but because, you know, there's generally one or two, you know, tech director in there. They don't know everything. They probably mm-hmm. know a lot about maybe animation system or the right. graphics pipeline, but not right. about art pipeline. So like, right. you still have to, like, there's also producers you got to talk to. Like, everybody has a different speciality. There's just so many things. So I agree with that. That being able to talk to people and explain to them what's happening without going into the dirty stuff, I think that's very valuable. And I think that's what designers plus technical artists do best.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. So, but do you do a lot of like, I mean, what does your day look like? Is it every day's totally different?
Not totally. So generally, so like last week, or this week rather, I should say, I was in meetings 1, 2, 3, and then 5 to 5 through 7, my time, which was for some other team members, different times. And that was the time I was actively, like, I had my PS4 dev kit connected with my computer, and like, I was profiling actively, like GPU profiling, and looking at what's happening and talking to the developers and telling them what's happening. And in my free time, I was either writing a report for a separate project that I did for previous week, or I was, you know, talking to my R&D teams or asking other team members about some graphics problems that they were having, some, you know, like API calls they were making. Generally, if I don't have projects, then I'm spending that time on writing reports or something. We also have some downtime because you don't always have projects. So we get this time called personal development time, which is like, you're supposed to get at least 2 weeks every quarter. You could get more, but at least 2 weeks. So in that time, I'm doing some other project that is not game related at all. That's my time. So I get to choose that project. I'm doing something related with machine learning, but that's if I don't have a project. So that's what my day-to-day looks. It's very different from day-to-day.
Do you feel that degree of, you mentioned it's like putting together a big puzzle. Do you feel that there's, and maybe I already know the answer to this question, do you feel like there's a degree of creativity behind it, where it's like, hey, we have to, I guess maybe the question I'm asking is, do you still feel that creative? Does it feel like as if you have created something to be like, aha, I have now figured out the solution, and that scratches that same creative itch, I guess.
Mutely. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that word, but I just had to do it.
We'll live.
I think you have to be creative to solve problems in games, because problems don't come in one way or the other, I guess. Like, even if I'm working on a mobile title, I still have content delivery problems that I would have on a PS4 title, right? And I think both of them need vastly different solutions to work. And you have to be creative, because each game will have a different problem. So you have to think creatively. You can't apply the same solutions to same problems, even though it's the same problems, they're at different scales or with different systems. So I think having that understanding that, hey, you know, I know I did that, but that doesn't sound right for this one. Maybe let me try this, or hey, let me pack some extra data in this file. Let me add this metadata. Like, I feel like the creativity comes in thinking about those solutions and not per se in like what you're making, I guess, but it's the solution that you find.
That makes sense. I love that.
I wanted to ask about something that you, sorry, Corinne, did I cut you off?
No. Nope.
I apologize. This is more of just an opinion question is, you know, you mentioned graphics aren't going away anytime and we're always making them better and everything like that. Obviously for the rest of forever, right? As long as Moore's law holds true, we're gonna have faster computers and we're gonna have better computers. And so people are always going to be improving processes and they're gonna be improving graphical fidelity of art. But do you think that, are we now or are we closely approaching a point at which like things are looking good enough that we're not gonna be worrying about that stuff so much? Cause like, I remember when Gears of War came out and everyone was like, you know what? Graphics are good enough now that we don't really have to worry about it. We can now focus more on gameplay. And then obviously here's where we are now, right? Do you think that that's gonna be a constant thing? Like we're always gonna be fighting for that? Or do you think it's going to be something that, like, are we going to reach a point at which it's like, you can't get better than photorealistic. So once we reach that point, then we don't need to expend as much stuff to try and improve these systems.
That's a really interesting question. I think for two reasons. One reason, I personally thought PS3 was pretty high visual fidelity, but what happened beyond that was we got 4K screens.
Yeah.
And once you pack more pixels into a screen, you need more data to fill that screen. Then you need your computers, your chips to handle, compute more data. So I think I think graphical capacity will continue to increase, not because that we have to get better graphics, but because, you know, we're going to get better screens and you're going to be able to see more details. And then those details need to get added. Also, I do think that in terms of like real-time graphics, there's a long way to go. I think in terms of rendering movies, I think, you know, you can get photorealistic. You can make a whole game CG generated, a whole movie CG generated, and it would look like live action. Mm-hmm. But you cannot do that with a game. It does not look that well, right? And that comes from ray tracing, right? And we can do ray tracing, but it still has a lot, like we're doing a lot of trickery to actually get that working, right? And our computers just aren't strong enough. So I think because our computers are gonna keep getting better and because our screens are gonna keep getting better, that we're gonna keep pushing visual fidelity. But I think for the time we're in, our visual capacity is already pretty high. So I don't know if that makes any sense, because that's how I think it has gone since PS3.
Yeah. I mean, I think we also have to recognize that there are some environmental costs to constantly, you know, having to throw out our old video cards. And, you know, I think that we're, as an industry, we're going to have to start like making decisions about like, do we need to push this every single year? Because that's kind of irresponsible, you know?
Yeah.
But what
yeah.
can we do technologically to make it faster or better or more elegant code or more, you know, more tightly manage the memory and those kinds of things. I think that's actually why that's really we cool. need really good technical artists.
Yeah, see, I never thought about it that way, but now the more I think about it, I'm like running 4 systems in my home all the time. And I'm like, that does not sound very eco-friendly. And yeah, we probably should optimize our systems more so that we don't have to keep buying new graphics and all. Yeah, so couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and I don't think NVIDIA is going to keep up. So too much Ethereum mining or Bitcoin. I don't know what anybody's mining right now.
People are mining too much and doing little.
Right.
We're actually facing that problem right now where we need some new computers for the lab. And AJ is talking to different bidders and a lot of like the smaller like mom and pop shops are like, we can't get graphics cards right now. Like, yeah, we can bid you computers without graphics cards.
Yeah, they're really, yeah, people are paying a lot of money for that. It's the same with consoles, PS5s, new Xboxes. It's just all the bots, I think. All the bots just keep grabbing them up.
I know, I still don't have a PS5. It's really bananas.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get one right now. I'm like, I'm going to wait till it's in stock.
Yeah,
I fight against that current. Absolutely not. Do you have any advice for someone who wants to be a technical artist as to what their portfolio should look like? Should they be showcasing their tools? Should they do a video walkthrough of how their tool works? Like, how can someone demonstrate their skills without just saying, here's my code, look at it?
Right. I think it's important to like make a distinction as to where you want to go. I mean, you can be a generalist, but that's really hard to present in a good way. If you think you can present that in a good way, go for it. But I think a better way of going about it is you know, define yourself. Like, hey, are you a Python scripter? You don't have to do tools. Do you just do Python? Put a lot of Python scripts in there. It doesn't even have to be game tools or stuff like that. Or hey, it's like, hey, or hey, do you actually, you know, make production ready art, but use tools to do that, and just maybe put a 5-minute time lapse video of you doing that and using your tool. If you do a lot of shader work, I think instead of showing shader code, 90% of the people you show shader code to will not understand shader code. So instead of showing shader code, maybe just, you know, do a 10-second skim through of shader code, and then the remaining 50 seconds of your video should be you showing what that shader can do, if it you know, if it has properties, or in what engine did you build it, or that kind of things. But I think most of all, if you have games, put them out. Like, you've gotta put games out. I think the reason people want to see games is not because, hey, we don't think you can do the work. It's because it's hard to finish a game. Mm-hmm. It's easy to start one. It's hard to finish one. It's mm-hmm. hard to, like, you know, do everything, put everything together and make it work. So if you can do that, if you've been a part of that process as a technical, especially as a technical artist, I think that says a lot about, hey, you've helped put those systems together. You've helped bridge those gaps to you know, bring this product to the finish line. And I think as a technical artist, that's very important. So I would say more than any tools or code, if you have games, put those in and maybe give a brief description of what you did on that game. And that's the best you could do.
What if you had something that wasn't a full game, but it was like, hey, this was a procedural city building something or other. So it's like, I don't have like a playable experience, but I made a thing that will destroy buildings when they get exploded.
Yeah,
like,
that's awesome. So, yeah, no, okay. That's awesome. And it doesn't, like, I think when I say a game, it's a finished product, right? And
yeah,
a finished
okay.
product could be anything. It could be a procedural world you created. It could be a pipeline that you wrote where you press one button and it makes an asset go from Maya to Unity and working and optimize, right? It could be any of those things, but it has to be a finished product. Like, if it's finished, it's going to hold way more value and sway over just unfinished, you know. It doesn't even have to look pretty. It has to look finished, feature
right.
complete.
Right. I love that. That's actually such great advice.
We need to have, like, on the screen right now, don't look pretty, look finished. I love that. That
is fantastic. I just had a whole lecture. Well, I was lecturing my class. It's perfection is the death of done. Yep. Done is more important.
Yeah, and a lot of times I think this one thing, like, at least I had this problem going into industry, was I was stuck on, like, hey, this is the right way to do things. And mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what the right way to do things is. If it works, it works.
Yeah.
I've always heard
how simple it is.
I've heard the term, if it's stupid and it works, then it's not stupid.
Yeah. I mean, well, you'd be surprised.
One of my most favorite quotes is from Duke Ellington. It's, if it sounds good, it is good.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Because I think academics a lot of time, like, or at least I did, because I'd never, like, been professional capacity before, at least not in game sense. And I'd only been academic my entire life, so I was stuck in, like, hey, you have to do things like, you know, you have to, like, structure your code this way, never copy code. There's no game that doesn't have copied code in it. Let me tell you that right now.
Yeah.
So, was I heard
a thing.
I but heard
not inside a game engine, you know, it's like it's a company's property, right?
So. Yeah.
I heard that yesterday on April Fool's Day, I heard that GitHub released a feature that said, like, you're only allowed so many copy pastes per month
unless you do, like, a
imagine that.
Yeah. And the wow. game industry grinds to a halt at that
point. Massive troll. Woo!
Yeah, I mean, it's not even game industry. I think it's just, like, why reinvent the wheel, right? Like, I think or you can like, there are, so I'm not even kidding. There are AAA studios that I've worked with that have used $40 asset packages from Unity Store.
Yeah.
You know why? Because there's no point spending money what's already done.
Yeah.
You can change that up a little bit if you need to, right? But why spend 2 weeks of a developer's time? You're paying them six figures when you can buy it for $50.
Yeah. And I think supporting those, you know, small producers of those things is perfectly fine, right?
And so I think it's code, you know, just make it work.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, if then statements, that's all it is, right?
If only.
Yeah, how's that for trivializing the entire world of engineering? It's just if then statements. Don't even worry about it.
I wish it was that easy. I feel like my job right now is more intense because I'm looking at systems holistically, but previously it was much easier.
Yep. Oh my gosh, we are like
almost
I can't believe how fat I always say that. It goes so quick.
It actually does go real quick. I did not even realize.
I know, right? So we are at the rapid fire question segment of our fun podcast.
Oh, the most fun segment.
I know. I think it's fun.
What was the first video game that you remember playing?
Pokemon and Doom.
I love how those are on like opposite ends of the spectrum.
So I did not have any console or PC when I was growing up. I would go over to my cousin's house to play games, and I had two cousins. One was 7 years older than me and one was my age. The one 7 years older than me played Doom. The one my age played Pokemon. I played both.
That's hilarious. I bet your parents did not know you were playing Doom.
Probably not.
So what was the first actual like system that you owned?
PS4.
A PS4? Wow, really?
Yeah. I mean, I played a lot of PS2 and PS3. I would so like where I lived, there was a little gaming store and you could like pay by the hour to play. So I did a lot of that. Yeah, I did a lot of that. Like I pretty much game like all through middle school through like that. But the first system I owned, PS4.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I have actually heard a lot of students that come from India that they didn't have the money to have, you know, repeatedly buy consoles. So they had like a Nintendo and then they had a PS4.
Yeah, no. And I didn't even have an NES. I had like an NES knockoff. When I was little and I did play Mario on that, but it was a knockoff. It was not real Nintendo system.
Well, obviously you learned enough from playing on the knockoff thing.
So what is your favorite game of all time?
Empires 2.
And why?
I used to be really good at the game. I used to be among the top 100 players in India when I was in high school.
Wow.
For Age of Empires 2. That was a long time ago, so I doubt I'm that good anymore. But that was the sole reason. I like being good at games. If I'm not good at games, I generally stop playing them. Simply because I can't focus on playing the game if I suck at it. I just get frustrated and I'm like, I'm not going to play the game. I love that game. I used to be really good at it.
Okay, go Adam.
No, I was gonna say I used to be good at, I was not the top 100, but like Age of Empires 1 was my game of choice, and I'll occasionally hear like sound clips in like YouTube videos and everything, and it will immediately throw me back. I'll be like, wait a minute, that's the priest. He's trying to convert somebody. I know.
Like, no, I gotta fix that right now.
Oh my gosh, my husband has played, just adored those games.
What a beautiful game.
I think it's interesting that you were such a great player, but you hadn't really considered going into games until.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. Yeah, I didn't know what game dev was. Like, I was like oblivious to it for some reason. Like, I never thought about it. I wanted to be an astrophysicist. I wanted to either be an astrophysicist or a cricketer. There was no in between. Yeah, it was one of the two. Astrophysicist, I loved astrophysics. I still watch astrophysics videos in my spare time.
I do too, and I never could have ever been an astrophysicist, but I love that stuff. Did you play cricket when you were here?
No. Yeah, I gave up that sport. Not gave up, but I gave up playing that sport a while ago.
Can we make like a special podcast that's just called like the duality of Utsav? And he can talk about like astrophysics and cricket, Doom and Pokemon. Like, let's explore all aspects of life.
Well, Adam, welcome to Technical Artists.
Yeah, right.
I keep myself open to experiences, all of them.
Yes, they hold two disparate things in their bodies all the time.
That's a very good point.
So that's how you know it.
So you mentioned Pokemon earlier. Who's your favorite Pokemon?
Pikachu. Yes, I'm that basic. I when I used to play Pokemon Blue, I would literally scour through that little forest that they would like the first few levels. I don't remember the exact place, but just to find a Pikachu, I would spend hours there because
Pikachu.
Pokemon Indigo League was my first like Pokemon show that I watched, and I loved that show. And that was the Ash and Pikachu show. So I was
Yep.
like, I love Pikachu ever since then. Never changed, never will.
You know what? Don't apologize for that. It's okay to like the fan favorite. There's a reason they're the fan
Yeah,
favorite.
right. So is there a game in the past, any in the whole 40 plus years of video games that you wish you could have worked on? Age of Empires 2?
Except for Age of Empires 2, you can't say that
Age of
one.
Empires, no, because like no, I think if I would have wanted to work on a game, it would have been League of Legends. And I've played that game so much.
I know.
I guess there's a little bit of bias in it, but I think like that game is like in a design point of view, I think that game is insane. Even in a coding, it's just in all points of view. Like the amount of I think effort that has gone into making that game, I can't even imagine. Like
Yeah.
and I wish I could be a part of that. And maybe I will be one day. I hope so. But yeah,
Oh,
that one.
wouldn't that be fun if they called Unity and you got to work on something, like solved a problem for them? That'd be so fun.
That sounds dope. I was hoping for that.
So if you were given control of a studio, what type of game would you make?
Age of
So I
Empires 4.
no, I'm gonna have two answers to that. So my creative and design side would make an RTS game, but my side that knows and understands the world will not make an RTS game. I'd probably make a mobile game, free to play, monetize the shit out of it,
Because
make
he's a
millions of dollars.
practical human.
I think you're the only person who's given a practical answer to that question.
Yeah, I mean, after I have all that money, I can go make whatever game I want, right? I don't have to answer to anybody.
Right.
So
You
yeah.
know, Flappy Bird, just do it.
Exactly.
What are you playing right now?
Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Oh, me too, man. I just got a stupid freaking email from them that said how many hours in it that I have played, and I'm like,
You're like, I don't want to know that.
I just saved Sigurd and he's such a jerk. And I'm
Oh,
like,
don't tell
oh.
me. I've barely started
Oh.
it. Don't tell me. But it's just I haven't had time. I actually bought it like a month ago, and past month or two have been really
And
busy.
it's big. It's big.
Yeah, I've heard.
I
Like
think
I
it's
played
too
Odyssey the
big.
whole way through. Is it bigger than Odyssey?
No. I don't,
Okay.
it doesn't feel like it's gonna be as big as Odyssey. I mean, I probably had 400 hours into Odyssey.
Wow.
I think
I
they said
had
that Odyssey was the biggest of them all, wasn't it? I
Yes.
think.
I loved Cassandra,
Yeah,
though.
no. I played as Cassandra too. Alexios's dialogue was just not
And
good.
I like I ever he I'm playing him as the male Eivor, and I really like him, and I like the voice actor, and I like all the, you know, I love
Yeah.
that. But Cassandra, I don't know. I don't know if it's because I'm a girl, but I was like, I mean, obviously, like I'm
Just
so
maybe.
attached to her. Like I could not let go of that game because I just kept like, why don't I have more things to do?
That's funny. I actually felt the same way. Maybe not because of the Cassandra thing. Just I think that game was actually the character. I love that game. I love all new Assassin's Creed games. I'm actually not a fan of the old Assassin's Creed. I know everybody
I
loves them.
stopped playing it too because it bugged me, but I started Odyssey and I'm like, ah, I'm okay with this.
I was going to ask that question because I was ride or die Assassin's Creed until the last Ezio game, whatever that was,
Oh, really?
Revelations or Brotherhood or whatever
Never
it
played
was.
that, yeah.
And then I haven't played an Assassin's Creed game in 7 or 8 years.
Well, I'm hearing
Uh,
Origins is also good. Have you played Origins?
I have, yeah.
Crap.
Origins is great. And yeah, I think if you don't like Odyssey, you may like Origins, because I think Origins is like the bridge between the RPG plus
Oh,
the Assassin's meta. But I think the RPG is way better than the Assassin, personally speaking, because I don't know, I like it better.
Yeah, I was really worried about Valhalla because I started playing it in the middle of the winter and I'm like, I cannot live in this Norway land. It's too cold. I'm cold everywhere. I'm cold. And then you go to England. So I don't know if you've gone to England yet. It's so much better. So.
Yeah, no, I did see that it felt cold. I'm looking forward to playing it. I started replaying Ghost of Tsushima a little bit. I love that game. That game is beautiful. So, yeah.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
And then the last question that we like to end on is, do you have any advice to either people who are graduating now or people who are considering a career in games, or perhaps advice to a wee little Utsav many years ago? Any advice to people learning what you've learned? Anything you want to give to the next generation?
Maybe a couple of things. I think one would be, you know, never stop learning. If there's one thing, I think school isn't supposed to teach you everything. It's supposed to teach you how to learn. And I think one thing, I've learned more in my past 2 years than I did ever at 16 years of school. And I've done 16 years of school and I love school, and it's nothing bad about school. I think to be in games, you have to have this attitude of being able to learn all the time. It's like being in school all over again, but you just get paid for it. So that's
instead
good for
of paying
me.
For it.
That sounds better.
Yeah. And I think second would be, hey, things can get tough, you know, like games is a hard industry for sure. Like it's not easy. Sometimes, you know, even people who are veterans, you know, have trouble finding jobs. You know, make sure you're not a douche, you know, I haven't had to apply for a job since my first job, because each of the jobs I was recruited for. So like, and that's not because, hey, I'm great at my job. It's because, hey, if somebody knows me, they'd be like, hey, maybe you should check out that person, right? And that's what happened at Foxnext. I knew somebody there, and we just met at GDC, and that person was like, hey, we're looking for a TA, and I think you'd be great. And I got that job. So I think be good to people and don't give up. If you're really passionate about it, you know, keep trying. So it only takes one chance. So, you know, so it somebody only has to take a chance on you one time, and you're probably good from there.
100%.
That's fantastic.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, it's so good to see you.
I know.
We will come and visit. We are going to come to Seattle. So
I can't wait.
We'll see you.
Bring the band together.
I'll buy you a beer.
Two, maybe.
Well, I don't know. If he's in the office, he said he gets fresh root beer. Maybe we just go to the office.
Hey, I could totally have like a mixer at the office, like an EA mixer.
That would actually be incredibly dope.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I could book our cafeteria for that. So
awesome. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Usof. Thank you everyone for joining us. And we'll see you next time.
See everybody.
Bye.